built that house with my hands. I raised it up to where it stands. With my brow I paid my debt. I drew it out of my sweat. I built that house with my hands. I built my life with my hands. I grew up from the ground up in the North Dakota fields. Braced for life and nothing else. So I dug in deep with my heels. I learned to read and write real well, and then I went to school.
Welcome to episode 21 of FTM for Trans Men. I'm your host, Aiden Xavier McCool, and boy, do I need some good escapism right now. It's common to feel forlorn or anxious over the direction our country is heading in. I'm really starting to feel it right now. And that might be because it's tinged with a bit of panic. Between Trump brazenly insulting our former allies and embracing leaders like Putin or Un, while his meeting with the latter being called a meeting between the two dictators, I don't think my current depressively anxious episode is unfounded. Or more recently, tearing young children away from their parents at the border. Although I have to admit, the announcement of the Space Force really made me laugh. I know I shouldn't be laughing, but come on. A Space Force? Really? We're going to have Space Marines already? Come on, there's something really stupidly hysterical about that. Okay. That being said, I think a change in pace and tone is in order. I've always wanted to do something different since before we moved a few weeks ago anyway. We all know a lot of useless trivia or a lot about an obscure topic that hardly, if ever, comes up in conversation. We'd love to talk about things like that more, and some people would love to hear more about things like that. So I'm going to test out a new segment I Learned Something. It's a working title at the moment. I might change it. It's the first thing that came off the top of my head. But before we get started, I want to dispel any thoughts, rumors, or angry comments about how this is plagiarizing from things like Citation Needed. This is not my intent. For one thing, I'm the only one talking right now. I don't know if I'm going to add on other people. I'm pretty sure I might, just because there are so many people in the world that know a lot more about other things than I do. Not only was Eli Bosnick too busy to help out, but when I reached out to him, he was also shocked to learn that I had a podcast. I'm just kidding. I didn't actually do that, but all in good fun. If I'm really being honest here, I just wanted a good excuse to geek out over a few topics that I know a lot about on and hardly have a chance to talk about. That's mostly why I'm doing this. But I know that a lot of you in the audience might already know a lot about a certain topic that I might be covering, but let's get this out of the way. First, let's not make this an opportunity to educate, let's not make this an opportunity to educate me or the rest of the audience in a condescending way if I get something, wrong. If I do get something wrong, please, I encourage you to educate me, so long as it's based in fact and not on bias. This means that personal bias on a person or event does not count, so please spare me the rhetoric about how I'm taking Peterson out of context. It'll fall on deaf ears. Also, I'll try my best not to mansplain something. This does not mean that I won't overexplain some things, though. Some people in the audience may be, vaguely aware of the topic, or may not have heard about it until listening to a specific episode. My goal has always been to make sure that everyone understands the topic of an episode and can take something away from it once they're done listening. So I'm not going to make an exception here. Okay, there. Now that we've gotten all that out of the way, the topic we'll be starting with is one of my all-time favorites and possibly the one I know most about, geisha culture. I can just hear Marissa kind of groaning and her eyes rolling, and she is not even in the room. Hell, she's not even at home right now, so that really tells you something. All right, so to start, we have to go with what the profession is. That's always a good way to... That's always a good place to start, especially if you haven't heard of the profession at all, which I think even in this day and age would be extremely rare, but hell, let's just go with it. So, the word geisha sounds strange. What does it mean? Well, obviously it's Japanese, which it just breaks down into two separate Japanese words, ge and sha, which basically translates to arts person. So, they are entertainers, not like street performers or actors or actresses per se, although they are very good at that. They dance. They do a particular type of dance, so it's not like you're going to watch them twerk or anything like that. That would be such a surreal party. They sing. They perform on instruments. They're also hostesses. They take care of a bunch of guests during a tea party, basically. I'll get back to what exactly a tea party is, but try not to get that confused with, like, the cute little tea parties little girls or little boys have with their stuffed animals, or even ones that we mock in British culture. By the way, as far as my UK audience goes, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to blast that or anything like that, but... yeah, that kind of stereotype exists over here. It's really dumb. Yeah, so we've gone over that. Their skills, they're able to dance, they're able to sing, they're able to converse with a whole bunch of different people. They entertain a whole array of people, from the common salaryman to the hottest celebrity in Japan or abroad, or hell, even the president every now and then. So they have to be good at that. There's also an age-old rumor, or how would I say it, taboo about them being prostitutes, which is not true. They got that from geisha girls, but trust me, I'll cover that too. We'll come back to that. All right, so a geisha is not necessarily just one type of person. You have your senior geisha, which have trained long enough, and your apprentices, which are just getting into it. Big differences between the two. Apprentices have, my goodness, a much showier appearance. Their hair is far more intricate, and it's their own hair. They actually grow that out, and it is shaped into these weird forms that they have to maintain for a minimum of 6 days. That's some real torture, especially considering that there is some... I wouldn't say much wax in their hair anymore, but there is at least some pomade or something. It's sticky. Yeah, sticky. Their kimono are also much, much, much longer and have a lot more designs, a lot more brighter colors. The obi, or the sash that they wear to keep the kimono closed, is also much broader and longer. If you have not seen an apprentice geisha, or even a geisha in general, I encourage you to go onto Google Images and do a search, especially of Maiko. Maiko is spelled M-A-I-K-O, Maiko. Or if you're going with the variation in Tokyo, it would be Hangyoku. H-A-N-G-Y-O-K-U. Important thing to note here, there is no difference between a Maiko and a Hangyoku. The only difference is the regional difference. Maiko is used in Kyoto, and Hangyoku is used in Tokyo. That's about it. Well, okay, I have to take that back. There is one very small difference between the two, and it is that I believe that the Hangyoku in Tokyo actually wear wigs, where the Maiko in Tokyo actually use their own hair. Anyway, both apprentices in either region or anywhere else in Japan, I'm sure, since, yes, there are more than one geisha district in Japan, they wear white makeup all the time. No, not all day, every day, but when they're entertaining, as compared to geisha, where they honestly do not wear that much makeup on a regular basis anymore, unless it's a very special occasion or the or one of the venues they're entertaining at requires that they dress up that formally. But we'll come back to that in a little bit. Okay. So we know what the profession is. We have a similar... we have an idea of what they look like and what they do. So how do they get there? Okay, joining the profession. So traditionally, you could do it... Well, traditionally, what am I saying? You can do it one of two ways. You can either join into it at a certain age, or you can be born into it if you are born to a geiko and just decide to take over the profession from there on, or just decide to train in it. So first, for the sake of conversation, we're just going to go with joining the profession. I'm going to go with how a young woman would join if she were being a maiko. Just because if you're joining after the age of 20 and decide to become a geiko or geisha, it's pretty straightforward. So this is a lot more in detail. It explains a lot more, especially regarding the whole culture, the community, how everything works. Okay, so a young girl can start or can join a boarding house or okiya, as it's called, around the age of 15. According to Japanese law, a young girl who is joining the profession must pass junior high school. She may not begin her formal training until she officially graduates. It's country law. I actually think that's kind of cool. So let's just say that she has passed, has met a okiya owner, which is commonly referred to as a mother or okasan, and they enter into an agreement, of course, with the parents' permission, and they become a shikomi, or a trainee. Shikomi translates to cocoon, but it's basically a trainee. This is well before any makeup is put on, their hair is done, anything. They're starting from the bottom up. So what they do is they go with the traditional Japanese thought of learning the profession by observation and hard work. So what does this mean? They help out with the chores around the house. They help do the laundry. They help the staff clean up. They help out with whatever the mother might ask her to do. They help their older sisters or the older Geiko and Maiko with whatever tasks they might have, such as, I don't know, can you help me get my socks? Could you hand me that book over there? Can you come to the store with me? Small stuff like that. Now, there is some kind of outrage and indignation over that, especially if you've ever read or watched Memoirs of a Geisha. Now, this is kind of a gray area, so I'm going to kind of call bullshit on it. Simply because, as I've explained just a few minutes ago, it's a traditional thought that one learns everything or most of what they need to know for their profession by observation, by helping out around the house. The young woman can learn how to properly speak, since they are usually on young girls. Actually, they're on everyone that has to perform or will be having regular... exchanges outside of the okiya. How to speak properly. You have to speak in the local dialect. It's required, more or less. They're not rude about it, but you will be corrected until you have it right. So you learn the correct dialect and how to talk respectfully. You learn how to properly handle a kimono. Sure, you may not be doing it yourself after you've started entertaining regularly, but hey, you know how it's done. You gain respect for the smaller jobs that those who help out around the okiya do. You get the idea. However, if we're talking about Memoirs of a Geisha, yes, I can say even in that time period, which for the sake of those who haven't seen it, It takes place between the late 1920s and mid-1940s. In that time period, yes, I have heard of a lot of how Okiya mothers being very, very, very cruel. I've heard of at least one that was extremely abusive to the point where if your chores weren't done by the time she came back, it got violent. So I kind of call bullshit on that, but only bullshit on, dear God, how can they make these poor young girls do all the chores by themselves? Hey, they're learning the profession, so aside from the mother being completely abusive, which nowadays she isn't, you know, it's normal. Anyway. Okay, so how does a geisha learn how to entertain? Well, there is a school or schools that are that have been established by the Geisha Association, or better known as the Kenban, K-E-N-B-A-N. This was established especially in Kyoto after the mid to late 1800s, but that was due to societal pressure. They wanted to set that up this way the geisha profession could be legitimate. You had to learn, you had to learn everything to be a good, to be considered a good geisha. You had to pass, you had to be certified in order to entertain, which I thought was pretty cool. So to help out with that, the Kenban set up a school that provided these classes in, different types of things. Fue, like the Fue flute, F-U-E, I believe that's how it's spelled. The shamisen, different types of drums. I can remember what they look like, but the only name I can remember off the top of my head right now is the taiko, which is that huge ass drum that usually sits on its side and you hit with sticks while standing up. tea ceremony. Tea ceremony is very big and closely related to geisha culture, surprisingly. Although I'm not very sure on flower arranging, I've kind of been mixed on some sources, but to be very, very fair, accuracy and good information on geisha culture outside of Japan is very hard to come by, so bear with me as best you can. they also have classes in, like, singing. Some geisha will be asked to sing on stage or to accompany someone who's playing an instrument and dancing while at a party. It happens, so you have to be prepared. And each geisha and maiko must learn this, even if they are not asked to dance or sing or play an instrument or they're too old. All of them have to do this. This way they can be competent and can better understand their own profession, which I think is pretty cool. Now then, as for license and certification, the Kenban also have exams. You learn everything in these classes that I've explained before, and then you are tested on them. Now, don't ask me exactly how they're carried out. I've only heard from one source, and to be very, very fair, at the time at which this test had been carried out for the source was 50 years ago, so things may have changed. As far as I understand, you are most likely asked to perform a certain piece. If you can do it well enough to the satisfaction of the examiners, then you pass and you are ready to start entertaining. However, if you fail, you don't get to entertain yet. You still have to work on it. And, that's the way it goes. If no license, no entertaining. Okay, so let's go on from there. Let's say the young woman has joined the Okiya. She's begun to learn everything else outside of the school by helping out around the Okiya. She's gone to school. She's passed the exam. She's ready to start entertaining. So what happens now? Well, that would be the Minarai period. Minarai, it's kind of strange. You are like a novice apprentice. You have just started. You are learning while on the job, kind of a form of externship, if you will. So a bunch of things happen well before the exams take place. I know I didn't mention them in order, but bear with me. her stage name is chosen by her mother and by the Okiya mother, not her biological mother, and a fortune teller well before then. She will not start using it until she passes the exam. Her mentor or her older sister will be chosen well before then, too, by the Okiya mother. That one's usually decided by the Okiya mother, and yeah, the whole thing about older sisters, I know I'm getting off topic again, but that is an honorary term for any Maiko or Geisha that has at least one day seniority over the young woman that has just passed her exam, or hasn't passed yet, but will. That's the rules, so that means that your older sister could be much younger than you, could be younger than you by maybe a day or so. You could be the same age, but she has at least one day seniority, so she is your mentor. You have to show respect. Okay, all of that is out of the way, all of the exams have been passed, and she's ready. So what happens now is she goes through Mizedashi, which is Japanese for open for business. So this is her formal debut. She puts on the fancy makeup, and there are just so many hairpins, so many that I have lost count. I am amazed that these young girls can hold their necks upright after they're done. Jeez. Makeup's on, fancy hairpins, very, very, very fancy kimono that are only brought out of storage for very special occasions. And she goes out with the Okiya mother, her older sister, and they go and make their rounds to the tea houses. That's how this culture works. It is matriarchal, and everything is based on respect. You show respect to your elders, you show respect to everyone that you do business with. That's all of the owners of the tea houses, the other Okiya mothers, the people that handle your kimonos, the people that help dress you, the people that take care of your hairpins, give you sweets that you can give to your customers. I'll get to that in a minute. It is all respect-based, and you are expected to do this. So that basically consists of your mizedashi. You go, you make your rounds, and you beg for everyone's favor, or, you know, you ask them to please help you out. It's kind of like your first day of work, and you're introducing yourself and saying, I hope we work well together. That's basically what it is. And she'll also begin to entertain at this point. However, she will not entertain on her own. Not yet. Not until the minarai period is over, and that's usually a month. Okay, so how can you tell who is a minarai, a maiko, all that other stuff? Well, that's pretty easy. It is very easy to tell who a minarai is after her mizedashi, because she has so many different hairpins in her hair. Most of them are kind of a honey gold. There are a lot of long silver flat pieces that stick out of the back. I honestly can't describe them well enough, but a simple Google image search will certainly help out with that. The makeup, the white face, the softened pink cheeks, red splotches around the eyes. Not to say that they're disfigured or anything like that, but kind of look like little red, orbs, I would say, around the back of the eyes, kind of like a cat's eye. Minarai will only have a very, very, very small portion of her bottom lip painted. It's to show an experience. When she's past this, the hairstyle only changes just a little bit, and the hairpins are toned down just a tad bit. At that point, the Maiko will paint her bottom lip a little more fully, but won't really start painting her bottom lip fully until she's past a year of experience. The further along a Maiko goes in training, the more her appearance changes. A minarai that's just gone through mizedashi will have a solid red collar. A Maiko that has been training for a while and is slowly approaching the changing of her position, it will become more and more white. You will see a lot more kimono collars that are red but with a different pattern. It's silvery, it's white. This could be flowers, it could be wheat chaffs, anything like that. This goes on up until the changing of the color, or what they call the Han Edi ceremony, which is what I just described, the changing of the color. There is one other kind of thing, or kind of ceremony that traditionally happened around, or between the exchange from, between the change from a Maiko to a Geiko, that is the Mizuage, or raising of the waters. This traditionally was rather dark. I will not lie, I cannot lie. It was basically the ritualistic selling of a Maiko's virginity to the highest bidder. It was not pretty, it was disgusting, and I've heard more than once that sometimes the only knowledge or guidance that a poor Maiko was given right before her the highest bidder came to claim his prize was just close your eyes and get it over with, which is just horrific. The practice has fallen out of favor a very, very long time ago and has become effectively illegal since 1959, so it hasn't happened in a very, very, very long time. Mizuage is still acknowledged, but the last I've heard, it was acknowledged more as a Sweet 16, where customers and patrons will give you envelopes of money. This way, you know, you can buy something nice, or the Okiya mother can put it towards your expenses, or paying off your debts. That's about it. There's no sexual exchange anymore, thank God. Okay, so we have gone through everything. We have passed the exams. We have gone through Mizedashi. We have gone through a few years' time as a Maiko. That's right, the Maiko period traditionally lasts about 5 years. We're assuming that the young woman who joins the profession is 14 to 15 years old. Sometimes it's a little longer, sometimes it's a little shorter. It all depends. So we've gone through 5 years, give or take, and it is time for the changing of the color, or the Han Edi. So what happens is the Maiko will develop another hairstyle for the very last time, a little more simpler than the one she's had. And once we reach midnight on her birthday, the top knot to the hairstyle is cut, and that's it. She is done being a Maiko. This also means that she no longer has to use her own hair to be styled, which, dear God, I mean, aside from the hairpins and everything else, I'm amazed, because to maintain that kind of hairstyle, they sleep on a weird, a very, very, very strange pillow, if I can even call it that. It's basically a very tiny roll of chaff, or I don't know what they're filled with nowadays, because they still exist, on a wooden base, and it's only maybe a few inches long. It's not supposed to cradle your head at all. You're supposed to position it somewhere on your neck and sleep on it. This way, your head is suspended above the bed, the futon, the whatever. I don't know about any of you, my neck hurts just thinking about that. Can you imagine doing that for 5 years or more? Ugh. So at this period, she is considered officially a Geiko if she decides to continue to pursue this career. Well before this, she will be fitted for a wig. Like I said before, she no longer has to have her hair styled every single day and keep it that way. So she can start doing that. She dresses up kind of fancy like she did the first time for her Mizedashi. Now she does the same thing she did for the Mizedashi. She goes around to all of the people she has a regular association with and says, "Congrats, look at me, I became a geisha, will you wish me well?" And of course they do. From there, it's pretty much the same, except for a change in wardrobe. When one becomes a geisha, her appearance changes. The white makeup, she does not wear that so often anymore. It's mostly for very special occasions, like a public performance that she has been asked to attend, or one of her younger apprentices is going to, or a very, very special engagement. if it's nothing very special, she'll just kind of put up her hair and put on some light makeup and a understated kimono. The sleeves become much shorter. The patterns on the kimono become much, much simpler. The sash is as maybe a little less broad, but the knot is much different. Where Maiko's obi sash will hang off her back like two regular strings, a Geiko's obi belt, it's in a box. It's the box knot. That's what it becomes, honestly. The hem also becomes a tad bit shorter. That is to say, if they're just using a regular kimono when entertaining. The length of the train for Maiko and Geiko does stay the same, but, you know, that's a whole different thing altogether. Their color becomes white, and their whole appearance becomes far more muted, relaxed, more mature, maybe, than their apprentice counterparts, which is fine. Okay, along with this also comes a change in responsibilities and probably living quarters. Traditionally speaking, a Maiko or Geiko could not leave the Okiya until their debts were paid off. We'll get to that once we get into the history, but nowadays they are encouraged rather to find another place to live. Geiko are, once they get old enough. They've paid off their debts, they're now mature, and it's widely thought and considered that they know how to handle themselves now where the apprentice doesn't. So a lot of them will move out and find their own apartments. And they'll still be in contact with the Okiya mother. She might still maintain their engagements and whatnot. They may go over there to get dressed because regular kimono on their own are pretty expensive. The cost of the kind of kimono that Maiko and Geiko wear are astronomical. A lot of them can't afford their own, which honestly, I can't blame them. I mean, whew, I've seen the price tag for some of those. Thousands of dollars just for the kimono alone. It's crazy. A Geiko is not required to stay in the profession for life, nor is a Maiko, although it's kind of frowned upon if a Maiko decides to leave before her term of contract comes up, and that's usually a period of time, 10 years, but that aside. If a Geiko decides to retire, she must not only let her Okiya mother know, as well as almost everyone else in the community, she must give away gifts. The traditional gift for a Geiko who is retiring is to give a box of white rice to her superiors, to every single person she had a business connection with, excluding the patrons, I believe. The idea behind this is that she would be retiring with her patron, her lover, whoever traditionally bought her contract out until her hair turned white. That was the idea. Sometimes a Geiko would give away gifts of white rice with red beans. This was to show that her feelings were mixed on retirement and that there may be a chance that she might return. But again, semantics.
I built that house with my hands. I raised it up to where it stands. And with my brow I paid my debt. I drew it out of my sweat.
FTM for Trans Men is produced by Marissa Alexa McCool and Press. You can support the show at patreon.com/fortransmen. You can email Aiden at fortransmenpodcast@gmail.com. The music you've been listening to is My Hands by Neil Swanger and is used with artist's permission. This podcast is a part of the Trans Podcaster Visibility Initiative.
Those walls would not give in. They kept our family safe.